Hey, 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 Talking Shizzle listeners. You know, it's always been important for me to align our business with other companies and individuals who share our values, especially those who share a deep commitment to serving nonprofits and social impact. So for that reason, I'm super excited to announce our very first season two sponsor, Kela. Kela is a fundraising and donor management CRM that is built specifically for nonprofits by nonprofit professionals. These folks really get it. Their mission is to empower nonprofits to deepen relationships, retain donors, and raise more for their cause. Now, several of our clients and partners use Kela and have continued to be impressed by just how easy Kela is to use, how affordable it is, and most importantly, the results they see using the platform. The Kela team is also phenomenal to work with. They are super friendly guys, and they have a continuous commitment to equity and inclusion. Now, go check them out. We got a special offer for you. As season two sponsor of the Talking Shizzle podcast, Kela is offering our listeners and community 40% off their first year subscription to Kela. 40%, you guys. That is a lot of shizzle. Think about all the other shizzle you can get done by saving that money on your nonprofit CRM. Plus, if you have under 250 records, you can get access to the Kela Starter Program for free. So if you are interested in learning more and booking a demo, go to kela.co/partners/creative-shizzle. That is kela.co/partners/creative-shizzle. Hey, hey, all you lovely people out there. You've got a lot going on in your day with big dreams and big goals for your world. Are you ready to talk some shizzle and learn some shizzle from leading entrepreneurs, changemakers, coaches, and overall interesting people who like to shake things up? I'm your host, Taylor Shanklin, CEO and founder of Creative Shizzle, and I am stoked to bring you a fresh episode of Talking Shizzle today. This show is all about helping you think differently so that you can grow. Talking Shizzle is brought to you by our team at Creative Shizzle, where we help businesses, entrepreneurs, and social good innovators make amazing marketing shizzle happen. Check us out on the web at creativeshizzle.com. Now, let's talk some shizzle. What's up, folks? We are here on a new episode of Talking Shizzle. Oh gosh, we are going to get into some really fun and interesting and hopefully insightful shizzle for all of you who are looking to figure out how to take your failures and make lemonade out of them and like how to learn and how to grow from your failures. We are here today with Mazarin Trace. What's up, Mazarin?
Hi, Taylor. Hi, Will. Happy to be here with you.
You are all bubbly because you just woke up, because you are in Portland and we are on the East Coast. And I was like, well, I wish I just woke up. But it's good to have you when you're fresh and ready to get that day rolling. So tell us a little bit about who you are, what you're about, and then we're going to get into talking about failures today, entrepreneurship, what nonprofit leaders can learn from your journey in entrepreneurship. And we might even talk about some funny dating failures and how you've taken that experience and put it into your work world.
Okay.
So kick us off. Like, who are you? What are you about? What's your thing? I just learned that you are also really good friends with Ellen Bristol, who's like one of my best friends. And for some reason, I did not remember that when we got on to record. But like, tell us a little bit about what you're about, who you are, where you live, all that fun stuff.
Hello, listeners. And hello, everyone. My name is Mazarin Trace, and if you want to check out what I'm about, go to mazarintrace.com. Hopefully, there'll be a link in the show notes. I've been in business over 14 years, and in that time, I've done a variety of things. I've done fundraising consulting, I've done keynotes, I've done, you know, conferences. Last year, I did a conference called the Nonprofit Consulting Conference. I also did one called a Path to Action Conference, and I really love teaching, training, and coaching nonprofit leaders and consultants how to succeed. So I have a mastermind called Asking for More, and I also have a podcast called that.
I'm kind of curious how you got into what you do. Was like there a story behind it or what? Or did you fall into it? Like, give us a little bit more background of like how you got to where you are now.
It's a tangled path of failures, fraud, deception, firing, all of it. Are you ready for the drama?
Oh, yeah. Like, we love a good... Our show is called Talking Chisel, so anything flies here.
So before I became a business owner, I worked at a nonprofit where the executive director decided she didn't need someone to watch one of our confidential shelters. And it was a domestic violence shelter. And women started prostituting themselves out of that shelter. There were children there. And a woman who eventually reported it was sleeping with a knife under her pillow. And so what ended up happening was the executive director decided to just kick all the women out, except the one who reported it, and took her to our other shelter, and then just returned the shelter to the county. So she really didn't want to call the police. But I was like, hey, maybe we should like draw this attention to the media. And then she instructed everybody in the nonprofit not to talk to the media, not to talk to me. I wasn't there at the time, but it was right after I worked there. And she fired 32 people in a 20-person agency over 2 years. And so I started to get really interested in like, what is workplace bullying? Because both I and a friend of mine also got fired from there. And I knew it wasn't personal because she was just firing every single person multiple times. And then I went and worked at another nonprofit that was more of a social justice nonprofit. Then the boss there was sleeping with my volunteer coordinator. And then she quit a week before our big event. And then she came in front of me and she's like crying. And she's like, he broke my heart. I'm like, what's going on? And that was the first I'd heard of it. And then she just walked out. And I was like, what the? Okay. So then after I left, he was found out. He got caught stealing twice. First, like $20,000 and then like $50,000. And like investigated by the Oregon Department of Justice. So like, all of this is to say that like I came out of these two kind of bad working situations being like, okay, so are there such a thing as good bosses? Does that exist? Why are nonprofit workplaces so rife with workplace abuse? Like, how can we help other people understand what's going on with them, take their power back at work, help nonprofit leaders understand it's in their best interest to address oppression at work so that they can keep their good workers and also help people ask for more. And so I took my anger at that situation and I turned it into over 1,000 blog posts, multiple books, like, and it wasn't all ranting. It was really just like, okay, if this is how the world is, then what do we do to change it in a positive way? And if we are hurting our people in nonprofits, then how can we say we're helping the world? I don't think we can. And it goes for any workplace, not just nonprofits. But anyway, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, that and more. No.
I told you drama and intrigue.
You did tell me drama and intrigue. Okay. So let's get into how you're applying some of that. Like, give me an example of a nonprofit leader that you were working with that you, I don't know, like, took a bad situation probably at their organization. And you don't have to give us specifics and say who, but like kind of at a high level, tell us some examples of crazy drama situations like that and how you coach people through it.
So let's see, several people I've worked with in the last several years, I can give you examples of. So a couple of nonprofit consultants, I helped them learn how to ask for more from their clients and coach them. And it took months to kind of overcome the conditioning that we're taught about being a good girl in the society where you kind of squish between being too much and not enough. You're right there in the squish. And they're like, I'm not supposed to ask. And these people were both people who are in their 60s and 50s, who they have been alive for a long period of time where women were basically considered property. Like women couldn't have, you know, her own bank account until like 1974 and like, you know, Connecticut. And so how does property have needs? Like you're supposed to be like low maintenance, right? And like not have needs. And so like, so a lot of the times when women enter the nonprofit sector or in business in general, you're kind of like overcoming like, oh, what if I did have needs? What would those needs look like? I don't even know if I'm aware of my needs. Am I allowed to have needs? You know, what are my desires? And so I help them kind of connect with that and then like come up with the phrases that would really help them learn how to feel good in their bodies when they ask for more. Because let's say, for example, that you wanted like, you know, to make $300 an hour, but you're only asking for $100. So your client says, great, I will give you that amount, $100. And then you're like sitting there upset. So you can't just ask for like 50% of what you want. You have to ask for 100% of what you want, because otherwise the person's going to think like, this person can't be pleased, or they don't really like me, or something's wrong and they're not telling me, right? And so this is how we hold ourselves back as women in the workplace. And the nonprofit sector is 75% women. So that's really something to think about. And that's what I love helping people overcome. And so we did that, but also in terms of somebody who's working directly inside a nonprofit, I helped her kind of connect the dots between how many donors they were retaining, how many donors they were gaining, and how many donors they were like increasing their amounts of donations based on the new messaging that we worked on together. And she just knocked it out of the park. Like, she totally got, you know, so many more. I mean, I don't want to, like, know the exact numbers right now, but it was significant. And she did all this with a smile and, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, and all of this is happening during the pandemic. And I just think it's incredible what we're able to accomplish during the pandemic, but also like how much we should really, really try hard to just give people grace and empathy during this time too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I want to go back and say, I completely agree. I think people have a really hard time asking. And it's funny, I think often about how, I mean, it is scary and I get it, but how can we get over that fear? Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, because I agree. I think it's particularly hard for women, and there are a lot of females in the nonprofit sector. And as a women business owner, talking and interviewing a fellow women business owner, I can't tell you why I'm not afraid to ask, but it's like the more we can do to help other females figure out how to ask to get to where they need to go, I think the better off we all can be. I'd be curious to get your insights. And when you're working with a female leader who's like clearly made good traction in her career and is at the point where maybe she's a director or VP or even the executive director, still having a hard time maybe asking that board for what she wants, like, how do you get them over that fear of asking? Because I think it's something that we don't necessarily talk about enough, but I know women sit there and get nervous about it, you know? And it's like, let's support each other in figuring out like how to get over that fear and that hump of just being like, I'm going to ask, I'm going to be bold, and I'm here and I'm just as qualified as anybody else at the table.
Well, for people who are socialized as women, which can include, you know, people that are maybe not identifying as female or whatever, right? Like, you know, trying to be inclusive in my language here. People who are socialized as women, like, oftentimes the first thing they come to me with is complaints. And I say, this is great. I want you to write down all of your complaints, personal life, business life, whatever it is. And so they do that. And then I have a whole presentation about this as well. So we take people through exercises right during the presentation. And I've been doing this during COVID, and it's been really, really helpful for folks. And then after 5 or 10 minutes are up, when they write down all of their complaints, I go back through it and ask them to go back through and say, okay, now I want you to see the desire hidden in this complaint. So let's say, for example, you're not getting paid enough by your clients, or you're not getting paid enough by your job. Then how much would you like to get paid? And at this point, they'll be like, oh, well, I'm making 15 hours. I'd like to make 75. And I'm like, okay, just go through that for the whole thing, right? Whatever else you have a complaint about. Maybe you want your mother-in-law to stop like stopping over randomly, or maybe you want your brother to stop borrowing your car, or whatever it is. You know, you have different things. And then when that list is done, then I say, go through and right size your desire. Is this actually the full 100% of what you want? Or is it still like 50 or 60 or 75%? And the person might say, actually, I'd like to get paid like 100K a year, you know, and this is what this looks like for me. Or, oh, yeah, I'd really just like to see my mom once a month, or whatever it is. And so then as you get clearer and clearer, you're like, wow, this is so much easier than just complaining all the time and just never having my problems be solved. And if you realize that the complaint, and you can start training people around you, praising them when they do something right versus complaining when they do something wrong, you're starting to be the person that is actually getting more of what they want in their life. So that's one example. Another one I like to do with women is say, if I were a bad girl, I would, because we're trying to break out of the good girl smush. So if I were a bad girl, I would what? I would rob a bank. I would run away to have a unicorn farm in Hawaii. Or, you know, I would write a romance novel and it would be extremely steamy, you know, or maybe I would, you know, you can go on and on. You can make it up, right? And then you can get down more. Because once you start being very fanciful like that, then you can get down more into, but like, if I were a bad girl, I would, you know, tell my board president who never comes to the board meetings to suck it. You know, and then I would be like, whatever, right? Like, you'd be able to finally get to the nitty gritty, the core of the juicy part of what you want. And when you're disengaged from your desires, you have no idea, you know, what that even looks like. And you say, well, I don't know what I want, or I guess this is just the life I'm supposed to have. I guess there's nothing better after this, or, you know. You know, like, there's so much that's wrapped up in that. And I could go on and on for days about this. So I'm going to cut myself off at this point.
Well, I think that's a fantastic exercise. If I were a bad girl, what would I do?
Right. And just give yourself 5 minutes and journal it and start out with the craziest things you can think of.
Yeah. Well, and I even want to say, like even thinking through, like, people probably a little shocked sometimes when you ask them that. And they're like, but I'm not bad. Right. And so you have to think about, yeah, but like there's an inner, I think that like being a bad girl, it's like, it's that inner risk taker that we all have, that inner child that we all have. And if the world were really our oyster, like what would we do with that inner child? You know, like that's kind of the way I think about it. I think that's a really interesting way to ask people to reflect. To get maybe to like to tap into that inner child and have a little bit of courage to say, okay, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go like sell everything and move to a unicorn farm, but I am going to take baby step number one, right? But it's like you have to like get out of your head by going extreme in the dreaming and imagination, and then say, okay, now what's like a realistic version? And like, what's a step one?
Exactly. Yeah. And then like, and your body and your mind will naturally go there. You don't even have to force yourself to come down off a cloud, because like some people are like, oh yeah. And then I do this and then I do that and then blah, 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 blah. And maybe they have political goals, or maybe they have, you know, emotional goals, or maybe they have like stuff that they're working on in therapy that they just want to be like, and then I would go take a shit on my boss's desk or whatever it is, you know, like you just kind of like make it up. And of course you're not going to do it, but it feels good to write it, you know? So
yeah, exactly. And you have to sort of like get imaginative to then maybe that helps you get into a frame of mind where you can say, okay, I'm not going to do all that crazy shizzle, but I am going to go ask for $100,000. That's feasible. That's not moving to Hawaii with pigs and goats and unicorns, but it is asking for what I'm worth in terms of pay, right?
Yeah. And then that doesn't seem as outlandish. I mean, I have another exercise that I take people through when they're like, oh, I could never ask for more than 50 an hour or whatever. And I'm like, I can take them through that.
So you probably help people figure out like what they are worth. Is that something that you do as an exercise?
I think everybody has inherent worth as a human being. I'd say that I help people go beyond their self-imposed limits on what they can ask for.
Yeah. Okay. That's a better way of saying it. How do you do that? How do you coach people through? I mean, because it's going to be different based on everybody's skills, level of expertise, where they've been, all of that. Like, so how do you guide someone based on where they are to figure out, like, what's that number to ask for?
Well, here's the secret. You have to feel it in your body, and you have to make it okay in your body when you're asking. And if you're cringing, if you're flinching back from saying, would you please give me $50,000 a year? People are going to be like, oh, this person is so afraid. And the animal of their body is going to be also responding to your body. And you know how people say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And it's about, you know, how you feel when you say it versus what you actually say, right? So if I said, you know, hi, my name is Mazarine versus hi, my name is Mazarine. Huge difference, right? Like in terms of the energy there. So the way I help people make it okay in their bodies to ask for more, and I'm standing in the shoulders of giants here. I just want to say, I worked with Kaja Urbanik, who does the Academy of Power for the last several years. And she is incredible. And there's hundreds of women all over the world who've worked with her. So I'm just basically talking about some of the stuff she's written in her book as well. But if you want to work with somebody or work with a group of folks that are working on this together, you know, check out what I do or check out what she does. But here's how you make it okay in your body. And this is what I learned from her. So you start with, okay, think about the number you want to ask for, and then feel it inside your body. How does it feel when you have that? What does that mean for you? What would that mean for your life? And also, like, what would that make possible for you? So just think of that number and then write it down, journal for 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever it is. And then think of a larger number. Maybe it's, if you want to do 50, maybe it's 75. And then maybe you do that all again. What would that mean for you? How does that feel in your body? What would that make possible for you? What would happen if you got that? All of these things. And then you feel it in your body and just pause and feel it in your body. And then you go to the next level. You could do this like 5 times and you just make a higher and higher number. And then at the end, people tell me this is how they feel at the end of this exercise. I had no idea how much I was holding myself back. I had no idea how much I was not letting it be okay that I actually could have a larger number that I even dreamed of. But we're so conditioned to accept less for ourselves, to only ask for 50% of what we want, to only assume that because we're in the nonprofit sector, we can't ask for more, despite inflation, despite all of these things that we know we deserve, and we don't have ways of getting if we're still keeping at this level, that it's just tremendously fulfilling for me to watch the transformation and people's revelations as they go through. At the end, I don't even say, what's your number that you feel comfortable with now? I just say, like, what did you learn from this exercise? Because that's really much more important to me than anything else. Like, and people feeling it in their body and making it okay in their body. And you can practice this, whether it's asking for, you know, a fundraising amount or asking for a raise or asking for your partner to do something you want them to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's all relative. Like, let's just say, like, you wanted a massage every single night, but you only asked for one once a month. Then that wouldn't make you happy. You know, so if you ask for one every night, maybe they just do, you know, a little bit every night. You just have to do like a full body massage every night, but maybe you could ask for that. Maybe you'd get it. Wouldn't that be awesome if all of our partners just gave us full body massages every single night? Like, what a more relaxed and happy world it would be, you know? We just got that. What if you could get that? What if you could ask for that and get it? Or allow yourself to negotiate with your partner about maybe doing it every other day?
Well, that might take us into some of the conversation later that we'll get into with your dating advice and failures and how you have taken that into learning as an entrepreneur. Yeah, I've often thought about, like, I want to go get one of those massage. I used to have this massage membership where it was like I got like 2 massages a month. But like that wasn't enough. Like I really need to get like a massage every day. But they're not giving it away for free.
It's definitely an everyday type of thing.
Well, then maybe you ask for like a foot massage from your person or do it to yourself until you have a person.
There you go. Or just go get a pedicure.
Yeah, pedicure. That's what I do. Exactly. I am actually fantastic little piece of advice here that I didn't really do this before. And now I'm like, why haven't I always done this? So I was at the airport recently, a couple of places. I was recently at a trampoline park with my kids on a Saturday and also recently at an airport. In both of these facilities, I saw one of those massage chairs where you like put in your credit card and you pay $5 and you get a massage. And I never thought these things would be any good. But then I'm at the trampoline park one day and I was like, I'm just going to try this thing. It was like $5 and I got a 20-minute massage in the chair. And it was like a legit good chair. Like it massaged my calves, it like everything. And so I learned from this that you should do that every time you see one of these things. And then, so I saw one at the airport again this last week and was like, $5, 19 minutes? Yes, please. That spurred me to think maybe I should just buy one of these massage chairs for my office. All right, let's talk about a failure that you had in 2022 that you're learning from already and resolving in 2023.
So many. where to begin? And that's why I wrote a blog post about it. So, dating failures. I also broke my toe in 2022 in a stupid jock way. I want to get swole for the revolution. So I love to like stack the plates at the gym. I was doing the leg press and I was like, let's do 300 pounds a day. Yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah, so easy, right? Except I dropped a 45-pound weight on my toe and I broke it and I have a manual transmission. So I drove myself to the hospital, which wasn't great. And I just didn't want to pay $1,000 for like a freaking, you know, ambulance. And I had like this little voice in the back of my head saying, don't go in there today. And I'm like, what? It's fine. And then I did it and it happened. And I'm like, that was a mistake. And then I know this is not really a psychologically revealing mistake, but I want to encourage people listening to listen to that little voice in the back of your head saying, don't do it, even if it doesn't make any sense. Sometimes that voice is right on. And I wish I'd listened to it. I'm still recovering from that. That wasn't fun. That was like November 27th. But lesson was learned. Now I'm working out without free weights. And that is also good.
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes that little voice does actually talk to you for a reason.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it really does.
All right, let's close it out. You were giving us, before we got on the recording, some insight into lessons learned in dating. And I was curious what you've learned in your dating life about people and how you have applied that into dealing with people in your business life.
So I actually have a whole presentation about doing 60 dates in 6 months. And I would love to tell people more about that. That was happening in 2020, in like 2019, though I did do a lot of dating in 2022 as well. The thing I learned from that is, well, a lot of things, but some of the biggest ones are, don't worry about rejecting people and don't worry about people rejecting you. There are so many people in this world. And that's a really good lesson for business, because I think a lot of times we can make it mean something if somebody doesn't want to work with us or if we stop working with somebody or whatever, right? There's really not, it's not that big of a deal. There's so many people in this world. And that's something we have to keep telling ourselves and reminding ourselves to share first our wins and just be really proud of ourselves for everything we're accomplishing every day. Even if it's taking a shower or like writing a blog post, it's like, that's an accomplishment. You did it today. That's enough. And I think we have an anxiety about being enough or doing enough in this society. And so taking a month on and a month off from dating last year was really, really helpful for me. And I heard about that on a podcast that I was like, this is great, because now I'm not overwhelmed with attention. And I also don't get jaded. I just try again when I feel rested. I'd also say, like, don't force yourself to do things and let yourself rest. And that's something that really hit home for me in 2021, 2022. There's a book called Work Won't Love You Back by Sarah Jaffe. There's another book called Resisting Work by Peter Fleming. And there's another book called Laziness Does Not Exist by Devin Price. All of those are really, really good books. If people want to learn more about rest and rest as resistance, Trisha Hersey's The Nap Ministry is another one. So she wrote Rest as Resistance last year, which is a really good book. I highly recommend it. And finally, I think one more dating lesson that I just learned a little bit late in the game, but please remember this, everyone. You don't need a reason to not see someone again, or even to swipe right. Just say vibe is off.
I think that's important, because that's applicable in all sorts of relationships. And I like that, because even if you are a consultant taking on new clients and the vibe is off, the vibe is just off. Okay. Sometimes if you are in sales and you're looking for, you know, like prospects, the vibe is off, not a fit. If you are a fundraiser looking for and spending a bunch of time on who you think might be a major donor or something, or a mid-level, the vibe is just off. Maybe you should just move on to the next person, right? If the vibe is off. So I think that if you have a bad boss, the vibe is off, go find a different job. You know, like, there's so many scenarios that applies to that. I think I'm going to start using that one. And so close us out. What's the best way to go look at your website? What's that URL? And are you on LinkedIn as well?
Yeah. LinkedIn /in/Mazarine. Website is mazarinetrays.com. Twitter, Mazarine Trays. Just get in there. I would prefer if you join my newsletter so I could give you all my mistakes and all the funny stories that you have liked hearing today. And I also give people Twitter jokes in my newsletter. So if you like laughing, you might like my newsletter.
Well, Mazarine Trees, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for sharing all of your shizzle. All right, folks, we'll see you next time on a new episode of Talking Shizzle. Until then, go get that shizzle done.
Well, hey there. That was fun. I love how much mind-blowing and mind-opening shizzle our guests bring to us with every episode. We hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast player so that you don't miss a beat of the Talking Shizzle podcast. And if you're listening on Apple, be sure to let us know what you thought and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from our listeners so that we can bring you all the good, juicy business growth shizzle that you would like to hear about. Get in touch with us and follow along at creativeshizzle.com or email us at podcast@creativeshizzle.com. Until next time, keep making your shizzle happen.